for early warning missile launch detection from space, the U.S. Defense Department relies on SPURS, a satellite system so technologically capable it sees the hot rocket exhaust on a single ICBM in a fraction of a second after launch. In an attempt at parity, Russia has built an early warning satellite system known as Tundra, a constellation of military satellites that claims to likewise be able to scan the sky above U.S. Minuteman missile fields, and other places around the globe, from space, to see, in close to real time, an enemy ATMS or adversary ATMS ICBM launch that threatens Russia with nuclear attack. But Tundra TMS capabilities are not anywhere near SPURS capabilities, a weakness that Russia is loath to admit. Defense analysts generally agree that Russia TMS early warning satellite system is deeply flawed, which, in a moment such as this, makes for a potentially deadly situation. AO Tundra is not great, says Pavel Podvig, the Western world ATMS top expert on Russian nuclear forces, who works with the United Nations Institute for Disarmament Research. Ted Postol is blunt. AO Russian early warning satellites don't yet TMT work accurately, he says. AO as a country, Russia doesn't TMT have the technological know-how to build a system as good as we have in the United States. This means AF satellites can't TMT look straight down at the Earth, a technology known as look-down capability. And as a result, Russia TMS Tundra satellites a look sideways, a Postol warns, a which handicaps their ability to distinguish sunlight from, say, fire. A notably troublesome is how Tundra sees clouds. AO their satellites can mistake cirrus clouds for missile plumes that are in a TMT there, a Postol explains. And seeing missile plumes that are in a TMT there opens the door for catastrophe. In a moment of heightened alarm, AO Moscow could think it RTMS being attacked. A if Russia thinks it RTMS being attacked, the consequences would be dire. In a 2015 briefing on Capitol Hill, open to the public, called AO accidental nuclear war between Russia and the United States, a Postol told a group of Congress people that Russia TMS a fragile early warning system poses one of the greatest dangers of nuclear use, that is, currently facing the U.S.A. That if misinterpretation of satellite data were to happen, AO Russia could engage in a gigantic, spasmodic launch of all its nuclear forces. A former Stratcom commander General Kayla warns us of what that could mean. AO Russia is the only country that can destroy the US in the next couple of hours. A 28 minutes, Marine 1, airborne over Bethesda, Maryland. Marine 1 races away from DC airspace as fast as the machine can physically fly. For a Sikorsky VH-92A, this means over 150 miles per hour. Inside, the president remains on comms with the chairman and the Stratcom commander. With every minute that passes, the president at TMS Marine 1 travels a little more than 2 miles farther away from the lethal proximity effects of the nuclear bomb that is rapidly descending on DC. Still at the top of the list of threats to the president at TMS life in this moment is electromagnetic pulse, that fast burst of electric current that likely will destroy all of Marine and near TMS electronic systems and cause it to crash. The special agent in charge of the President at TMS security detail has been focused on how to mitigate this threat, and now he has decided to take action. He instructs the three-man cat element to get ready to tandem jump the President out of the helicopter. Scientists have known all about natural EMP events since the 1800s. Richard Garwin wrote the first paper on nuclear EMP in 1954, at Los Alamos. Its findings are classified. American defense scientists started paying more attention to its effects in 1962, after observing a nuclear weapons test in outer space called Starfish Prime. From post-blast measurements, it became clear that an EMP weapon exploded at high altitudes has the capability of permanently destroying large-scale infrastructure on the ground. AO during the Cold War, Russia live tested an EMP in space over Kazakhstan, other former CIA Russia analyst and later EMP Commission Executive Director Dr. Peter Pryde tells us. and that this high-altitude EMP destroyed all manner of electronics within an enormous footprint extending hundreds of miles on the ground below. When a nuclear bomb detonates closer to the ground, EMP effects are localized. The President at TMS Marine 1 helicopter is EMP protected, but the equipment has only ever been tested in a chamber. No one knows what will actually happen in a real event. The President is being taken to the Raven Rock Mountain Complex, the Pentagon at TMS Alternate National Military Command Center, also known as SITAR. The bunker was built during the Cold War. Its original plans were drawn by the Nazi engineer turned U.S. post-war Operation Paperclip scientist Georg Ricci, whose credentials the American military admired, and who had built Hitler a TMS underground bunker in Berlin during the war. The distance from the White House to SITAR is roughly 70 miles. Marine One usually takes around 30 minutes to get there, depending on takeoff and landing times. The commander-in-chief has been in the air for a little over 4 minutes. Not for another 4 or 5 miles will the helicopter be outside the dangerous overpressure zone. Marine One moves fast over Bethesda Hill, near where the interstate highway crosses Timberland Local Park. In the grass below, children playing on swing sets and slides get scooped up by terrified parents and babysitters as they receive word of a nuclear attack in California, everyone now racing to get home. Inside Marine One, over satellite comms, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff presses the president into action. 5 minutes remain on the red impact clock. The chairman of the Joint Chiefs is as certain as he is calm. "Chairman, sir, we need, from you, the Universal Unlock Code." "President, what in hell is the Universal Unlock Code?" "It is remarkable just how little a president of the United States knows about nuclear war." "Stratcom Commander, the US has been attacked." The red impact clock continues to count down. Explanations at a time like this seem absurd. "Chairman, I advise you to provide Stratcom with the Universal Unlock Code, Mr. President." "Sir, if there were time to explain, it would go like this." In the words of former launch officer Bruce Blair and colleagues Sebastian Philippe and Sharon K. Wiener, if the president selects a limited nuclear option, a selective unlock code allows crews to fire specific missiles at specific targets, and only those missiles. The trio are citing a feature called right of launch, a critical component of nuclear command and control that guarantees the president, and only the president, can ever authorize nuclear use. The selective unlock code acts as a safeguard. Unless, that is, the president overrides right of launch with a universal unlock code. Just as the adjectives suggest, this code would allow intercontinental ballistic missile and submarine crews to launch all of their nuclear weapons, Blair, Philippe, and Wiener tell us. "Stratcom Commander, we need the universal unlock code. America TMS ICBM crews have just launched 50-minute man missiles on the president at TMS command. The submarine launch of another 32 nuclear warheads is underway. Should the president need to authorize a second nuclear strike, he must do so with new nuclear launch codes. Although the launch crews all have the keys necessary to fire additional nuclear weapons, other weapons experts explain, they lack the unlock codes needed to arm, target, and fire those weapons. If a second launch needs to occur, multiple different unlock codes would have to be sent to the launch crews. And for that, the National Security Agency must create entirely new codes. Right of launch ensures that if the president authorizes the use of 82 nuclear warheads, crews launch 82 warheads. Not 83, and not 84. The Stratcom commander tells the president that Stratcom assumes the position that there will likely be additional missile strikes against the United States. And Stratcom will need to respond. The chairman is blunt: if the president dies, Stratcom cannot launch additional missiles. Unless Stratcom has the universal unlock code. The president stares out Marina near TMS window. In the middle of the mayhem, a thought occurs. Where TMS the VP? The president asks. If the president dies, authority transfers to the vice president, who, as second in the line of succession, is also accompanied 24/7/365 by a milady carrying a football. National Security Advisor, the VP was at Arlington Cemetery laying a wreath on a grave. Movement is underway. Buter, chairman, with line of succession in jeopardy, we need the universal unlock code. This is the Razoratia message. Like the W. Somerset Maugham novel of the same name. The story of a World War I pilot so traumatized by the carnage of war, he rejects war in pursuit of the meaning of life. Ayo, the sharp edge of a razor is difficult to pass over, thus the wise say the path to salvation is hard. A contemplating the reality of the universal unlock code. The president is incentivized. If he learned about any of this during his president-elect briefing, he doesn't TMT recall. Now it seems profound. If the world is going to end in nuclear holocaust, he a TMD rather not be the one with a billion or more people TMS blood on his hands. The president authorizes the universal unlock code. In the event the president or his successor becomes unlocatable, nuclear launch decisions can be made directly by the STRATCOM commander now. 31 minutes, National Military Command Center, Pentagon. Inside the nuclear bunker beneath the Pentagon, 120 seconds remain until a nuclear bomb detonates over the building, obliterating everyone and everything with a violence and a permanence that is as catastrophic as it is absurd. All 27,000 personnel who work here are about to die. This includes all the headquarters command staff for the Army, the Navy, the Air Force, the Marine Corps, the Space Force, the Coast Guard, the 11 U.S. combatant commands, many of the 17 intelligence agencies, and tens of thousands of other humans. And this is just at the Pentagon. Unless, that is, North Korea TMS nuclear warhead fails upon re-entry. Which it could. The Hwasong-17 has traveled 6,000 miles from Pyongyang. It has reached speeds of 15,000 miles per hour and a cruising altitude of 700 miles. It has gone through boost and mid-course phases. All four U.S. interceptor missiles that tried to shoot it down missed. Now the nuclear warhead must re-enter Earth's TMS atmosphere. This is a critical time, one where failure is commonplace. Ayo, re-entry is an area where so many different things can go wrong, a Los Alamos weapons engineer Glenn McDuff tells us. Ayo, it has to be precise. Spinning like a bullet. If the re-entry vehicle gets off target, loses flight stability, it doesn't TMT re-enter. It burns up. A for years, the CIA remained convinced that North Korea TMS ballistic missiles did not have re-entry capability. Then, in 2020, for reasons not made public, their assessment changed. So many lives hang in the balance. Will re-entry succeed or fail? 32 minutes. SecDef and vice chairman in the Osprey. Seated inside the V-22 Osprey barreling towards Site R, the Secretary of Defense has been listening in on satellite comms. But his focus is on Russia. He is determined to speak with the President of the Russian Federation. Beside him in the aircraft, the vice chairman is on the line with an officer from the Defense Information Systems Agency, a critical special missions support unit. DISU is the combat support agency charged with connecting the entire force of Defense Department employees over 4 million users to the Defense Information System network worldwide. Through its Joint Staff Support Center, DISU operates and maintains the National Joint Operations Intelligence Center inside the Pentagon and at Site R, with the Pentagon just seconds away from complete annihilation. All emergency operations and communications have switched over to Site R. DISA TMS critical special missions support personnel are relaying everything they can, as fast as they can, to the vice chairman and the Secretary of Defense. The SecDef and vice chairman have been in the air for 14 minutes, and they are already almost twice as far out of DC airspace as Marine One. The V-22 Osprey is a significantly faster aircraft, larger, and with a much greater wingspan. On each wingtip a 38-foot diameter, three-blade composite rotor is attached to a rotating nacelle, each able to swivel up to 90 degrees, in the vertical direction, when the plane operates as a helicopter. This feature allows the Osprey to land and take off vertically, like a conventional helicopter, but also gives it the power to fly twice as fast as most other helicopters by rotating its nacelles forward and converting itself into a turboprop plane. Because the Osprey left the Pentagon before the president left the White House lawn, and because the Osprey is faster, it is already out of the dangerous overpressure zone, which means the SecDef and the vice chairman have a much greater chance of making it to the Raven Rock Mountain complex alive than the president does. So much has happened in the last 32 minutes. So much depends on what happens next. But the SecDef remains focused on one thing, getting the Russian president on the line. Like many who become the US Secretary of Defense, the SecDef in this scenario has spent his life working within the military-industrial complex. This makes him uniquely aware of an existential peril that exists. A terrifying flaw in mutual assured destruction. A kind of hole. Over the North Pole. A weakness that is well known to nuclear weapons experts like Hans Christensen, but largely ignored by the rest of the world. AO the Minuteman III ICBM does not have enough range to target North Korea without overflying Russia, A. Christensen explains. Meaning 50 ICBMs launched from missile fields in Wyoming must travel on a trajectory that flies directly over Russia. AO the hole. It RTMS very dangerous, A former Secretary of Defense Leon Panetta confirms. AO don't UTMT think people give it enough thought. A at the time of this scenario, relations between the US and Russia, two nuclear-armed superpowers, are at an all-time low. Paranoia is high. In this scenario, the US president is not on friendly terms with the president of the Russian Federation. And now nuclear weapons have been launched by the United States at North Korea in a counter-attacker, and they must fly over Russia to get there. This is a recipe for disaster. In this scenario, the Secretary of Defense fears, sir, with very good reason, that if he doesn't TMT reach the Russian president immediately, as in now, a cascading series of new, nightmare events could unfold. 32 minutes, 30 seconds, Ozar Air Base, Republic of Korea, South Korea. In an underground bunker at Ozar Air Base in South Korea, a US Air Force colonel stares at a satellite image on a screen in front of her. Few US military bases in the world remain on as permanent a high alert status as Ozan. Their defense posture is, literally, AOE ready to fight tonight. A in the nuclear conflict now unfolding, South Korea is almost certainly a next target. The US colonel watches the screen in front of her. Beside her is her South Korean counterpart. Analysts have identified movement along the border with North Korea, less than 50 miles from the bunker here. On Osana TMS tarmac, F-16 Fighting Falcons and A-10 Thunderbolts taxi down the runways as American and South Korean pilots prepare for combat. U.S. Army Black Hawk helicopters prep sling loads for disbursement to smaller, forward operating locations. Every and all from the pilots, to the maintenance crews, to the soldiers who pump gas, who is suited up in chemical, biological, and radiation protection gear. US pilots in South Korea train in chemical, biological, radiological, and nuclear incident gear. Courtesy of Colonel Julian Chestnut, RET, the intelligence community estimates that, as of 2024, North Korea has roughly 50 nuclear bombs. North Korea is also understood to maintain the largest chemical weapons stockpile anywhere in the world, a 5,000 tons of TM worth of much of it preloaded onto rockets. Ozan Air Base is always ready for combat. With its sister facility, Camp Humphreys, located 12 miles to the south, the US military maintains its mission in Korea of providing a ring of safety around Seoul. Seoul is the largest megacity in the developed world and is situated just 40 miles to the north of Ozan Air Base. With its 9.6 million residents, Seoul is among the most densely populated cities on Earth, with roughly 1 million more people than New York City. The Seoul capital area has 26 million people. Half the country lives here. To protect the Osan Air Base from missile attack, the base relies on the Terminal High Altitude Area Defense System, of the multi-billion dollar system designed to detect and shoot down incoming missiles. But every weapon system has holes. Founder TMS weakness is that it cannot handle volume. AFHAD systems are set up to engage several targets at a time, I says military historian Reed Kirby, a not hundreds of them. A Kirby consults for non-governmental organizations on North Korea TMS weapons of mass destruction capabilities. The US Air Force colonel in the bunker stares at the satellite images, eyes peeled for signs of movement along the border with the North. For signs of a dreaded chemical weapons saturation attack. 32 minutes, 30 seconds, Marine 1, airborne. There is chaos in Marine 1. Some of the individuals on board are shouting, others are praying, others texting their final goodbyes. The Milady is focused on the football. The special agent in charge and the three-man cat element are all focused on saving the president of TMS life. In the cockpit, the pilot moves the helicopter into a steep climb, then indicates to the special agent in charge that the aircraft has reached the altitude required. The SAC signals to the lead operator on the cat element. The cat operator grabs the president by his harness and clips the commander-in-chief to his own body. The milady stands, the football secured to his chest. A second cat operator slides open the helicopter door. Wind rushes in. The president and the cat operator jump. The SAC jumps. The Malay jumps with the football. The two remaining cat operators jump. From inside the aircraft, the presidential advisors watch them go. The president, strapped to the cat operator in tandem, falls through the air. Rip, rip, rip. Each cat operator pulls his parachute ATMS ripcord. The SAC pulls his ripcord. The Malay with the football pulls his ripcord. Six parachutes unfurl. Seconds pass, the parachutes floating to Earth as designed. There is a flash of nuclear light, followed by a fraction of a second of eerie and profound silence. The bomb, 33 minutes, ground zero, the Pentagon. A 1 megaton thermonuclear bomb detonates in a live action test in French Polynesia in 1970. French armed forces, in the first fraction of a millisecond, a flash of light superheats the air to 180 million degrees Fahrenheit, incinerating people, places, and things, and absorbing a once bright, once powerful, once vibrant city center in a holocaust of fire and death. The fireball from this one megaton nuclear weapon that strikes the Pentagon is thousands of times more brilliant than the sun at noon. People from Baltimore, Maryland, to Quantico, Virginia, see this flash of light. Anyone staring directly at it is blinded by it. In this first millisecond, the fireball is a 440-foot diameter sphere. Over the next 10 seconds, it expands to 5,700 feet in diameter, more than 1 mile of pure fire, 19 football fields of fire, all obliterating the nexus of American democracy. The edges of the fireball stretch all the way to the Lincoln Memorial to the north and into Crystal City to the south. Everything and everyone that existed in this space is incinerated. Nothing remains. No human, no squirrel, no ladybug, no plants, no animals, no cellular life. The air around the fireball at TMS edges compresses into a steeply fronted blast wave. This dense wall of air pushes forward, mowing down everything and everyone in its path for 3 miles out, in every direction. Accompanied by several hundred mile per hour winds, it is as if Washington, D.C., just got hit by an asteroid and its accompanying wave. In Ring 1, a 9 mile diameter ring of engineered structures change physical shape and most collapse. Piles of rubble left behind stand 30 or more feet high. The initial thermonuclear flash has set everything in the fireball at EMS line of sight on fire. It melts lead, steel, titanium. It turns paved streets into molten asphalt. At the outer edges of Ring 1, Rare survivors become trapped in liquefied roadways, catch fire, and melt. The X-ray light of the nuclear flash burns skin off a PPTMS bodies, leaving their extremities a shredded horror of bloody tendons and exposed bone. Wind rips the skin off a PPTMS faces and tears away limbs. Survivors die of shock, heart attack, blood loss. Air and power lines whip through the air, electrocuting people and setting new fires alight everywhere. As tens of seconds pass, the fireball rises 3 miles up into the air. Its ominous cloud cap turns the light of day into darkness. Some 1 to 2 million people are dead or dying, hundreds of thousands more now caught in the rubble and the flames. Ayo, there will be virtually no survivors, and the government TMS Nuclear Advisory Panel has long warned of what will happen in the first ring around Ground Zero. Ayo, there will be nothing recognizable remaining. Only foundations and basements remaining. A never in the history of mankind have so many human beings been killed so fast. Not since a mountain-sized asteroid smashed into Earth 66 million years ago has so much global devastation been set in motion in a single strike. The die has been cast. The singular, haunting words from former Stratcom Commander General Robert Kahler come alive. Ayo, the world could end in the next couple of hours. A and now it is about to. 33 minutes, Serpukhov 15, Kaluga Blast. Serpukhov 15 Satellite Control Center in Russia. Ministry of Defense of the Russian Federation, in the forest 90 miles southwest of Moscow, in rural Kaluga Blast, the Serpukhov 15 satellite control has picked up a signal. Red lights flash. Alarms sound with shrill repetition. Ayo, attention. Launch. An automated voice instructs the crew. An American ICBM launch has been detected. The instruction is followed by the AO first Echelona command, Russian nomenclature indicating the highest level of nuclear alert. Serpukhov 15 is Russia TMS Western Command Center for incoming ICBM launch data. It is a component of the Russian Air and Space Forces, which itself is a separate branch of Russia TMS Armed Forces, subordinated directly to the General Staff, A. Pavel Podvig explains. The radars here receive data from Tundra space satellites, and it is the job of the Serpukhov 15 commander to relay that information up the chain of command. The Russian Ministry of Defense has had officers stationed at the Serpukhov 15 facility for more than 50 years. As in America, there have been terrifying false alarms. Once, in 1983, a lieutenant colonel named Stanislav Petrov was the commander in charge when satellite data indicated there were 5 American ICBMs on their way to strike Moscow with nuclear weapons. For reasons having to do with human intuition, Petrov became suspicious of that attack information. Years later, he told Washington Post reporter David Hoffman what he was thinking at the time. "I had a funny feeling in my gut," A. Petrov said, asking himself, who starts a nuclear war against another superpower with just 5 ICBMs? In 1983, Petrov made the decision to interpret the early warning signal as a false alarm, he said, thereby not sending a report up the chain of command. For his well-placed skepticism, Lieutenant Colonel Stanislav Petrov famously became known as the man who saved the world from nuclear war. But in this moment of intense nuclear crisis, in this scenario with the US under nuclear attack, and a slew of ICBMs having just launched from a missile field in Wyoming, the reaction of the present-day commander at Serpukhov 15 is different than Petrov's TMS reaction was in 1983. It is not just that Tundra erroneously reports sunlight as hot rocket exhaust, or that it confuses clouds with missile plumes. Tundra misreports the number of things. Ayo, Tundra can probably not accurately measure the number of ICBMs in a 50-minute man launch, A. Ted Postol maintains. Ayo, it could look like 100 or more. The commander at Serpukhov 15 stares at the early warning data on the electronic screen in front of him. What are 50-minute man missiles heading over the North Pole? Tundra says has more than 100 ICBMs. That is a motherload of nuclear warheads. Enough for a preemptive. decapitation strike against Moscow. The commander at Serpukhov 15 in this scenario does not have the same skepticism about intent that Lieutenant Colonel Petrov did some 40 years before. He picks up the phone and calls Moscow. "The Americans are attacking us with ICBMs," the commander says. 34 minutes, Hudson Yards, New York City.